And we're holding on Mem Ahmed Bey's the holding on Mem Ahmed Bey's the third line. We're still in the middle of talking about Bikur Cholim, about the dinim and the agada of it. But the Gemara is digressing over here to talk about something else first. The Gemara had digressed to talk about a couple of other things. So now here's another one. As it often is, Pashtus, the connection is that the Amora that's saying it is the same one as before. However, here we have in front of us Rav Ami Omer Rav, where the previous one didn't seem to have that. There are different Girsois over here, though, who the Amoraim are. The previous statement we had was Rovin in the name of Rav. So there are different Girsois, where either over there it was Rav Ami, just as it is over here, or the other way around, that here it's Rovin, just as it is over there. Anyway. So Omer Rav Ami, Omer Rav, my dichtiv. What does it mean? Now, there's a pasuk in Yechezkel. Hashem tells Yechezkel various times to act out different aspects of the Golos in order that he was living. He was saying Nevuah in the few years before the Churban. He was living in Bavel, actually, but his audience is the Jews in Bavel to tell their relatives in Eretz Yisrael, as well as he had been brought there during the first Golos, 11 years, the Golos of Yechonia, 11 years before the Churban by Yisrael. So his audience is the Jews of Eretz Yisrael and of Bavel. So Hashem told him to act out various things to demonstrate to people what's going to happen if they don't do tshuva. So at one point, Hashem tells him, Va'ata ben Adam, you son of man, which is Hashem's name for Yechezkel throughout the Sefer, Aseh l'cho klei goyla, make for yourself instruments, make for yourself kelim of golos. So Hashem goes on to tell him that I want you to make those and walk around with them every day. And after a while, people are going to ask you, what's all that? And you're going to explain to them that this is what you people are going to be going through if you don't do tshuva. So what are klei goyla? Zuner v'ukara v'shatiach. This refers to a ner, which is a lamp. Or the Rosh gives another girsa noid, which would mean a skin bag that you can use to drink liquids out of, uka'ara, and a bowl or plate, the shatiach, and a mat. So each of those things, so if we say the first one is a ner, is a lamp, so you'll have light by night. According to the girsa noid, it's something to be able to drink out of. The ka'ara, the plate, or the bowl, is that way you can use it. You can use it, among other things, to knead dough in. And the mat is to be able to, the Ran says to eat on it, the Rosh says to sleep on it. Actually, the Medrash, there's a Medrash in Eicha Rabbah that tells the same thing, but says it slightly differently. The first thing, instead of a lamp or a skin bag, it mentions chemes, which is another kind of skin bag, which is generally used to carry solids. So the Medrash explains over there each of these things would have two purposes. The bag you could use to hold flour, because you're going to need it on the way to be able to eat. And also you can use it at night as a pillow to sleep on. The bowl you can use to knead dough and also to eat and drink out of. And the mat, you can use it to sit on and to sleep on. So Hashem is telling Yechezkel, make for yourself those three things, and the Jewish people should see that you're making them and you're walking around with them. And when they ask you what that's all about, then you're going to tell them this is what's going to happen if the people don't do tshuva. And they end up going into Golos, and Mem Aleph Amud Aleph, the top. The Medrash goes on to say, by the way, that the Jewish people did not listen and they didn't prepare themselves these things. The result was when they went into Golos, when Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the Beis Hamikdash and took them into Golos, they were unprepared. So then what happened is, in particular, they wanted to make themselves bread. They wanted to knead dough. Now, if they had listened to Yechezkel, if they had listened to Hashem's instructions through Yechezkel, they would have had a bowl to knead it in. Like this, they didn't. So they had to knead it and bake it in pits in the ground. And the result is that the dough got mixed up with grit and gravel and dirt and whatever. And then when they tried to eat it, they cracked their teeth on it. The Medrash says, this is a pasuk, and it is a pasuk in Eicha, by Yagres b'chotzat Shinai. Hashem, the Jewish people say, Hashem cracked my my teeth on gravel. That's what we're talking about, was that story of that that happened because they weren't prepared. This is, by the way, this is the basis for the minhag that we have an egg dipped in ashes by the Sodom of Sekis when Tisha B'Av is in the middle of the week, is based on that story. Anyway, so that's what it means. Then that's what clay goyla are. Then implements, kalim, that a person can use, utensils that a person can use when they're going into golos to be able to at least have the basic necessities of life. So now the Gemara brings another drasha on another pasuk, which also has to do with the toichcha, which also has to do with going into golos and being in great deprivation, having very little. The pasuk says in the toichcha in Kisavo, b'choser koil, Hashem says you'll lack everything. So what do we mean by everything? What specifically is added by the word kol? Meaning, in other words, the point of the question is that if it just means literally that they're lacking everything, the pasuk then goes on to mention that they're going to be berov with summer over eroim, they're going to be hungry, thirsty, and without proper clothing. So therefore, the implication is that b'choser koil means something else particular, some one particular thing which is not which is very necessary to have for quality of life. So what is that one thing? So Omar Rab, b'loy ner, b'loy shulchan, means without a lamp and without a table to be able to eat on. So in other words, the pasuk is warning you that at the time that when the toichacha takes place, that you're going to be lacking, as the pasuk says, you're going to be lacking food and clothing, but also you're not even going to have the things that at least the little comforts like a lamp and a table to be able to eat on, you're not even going to have those. Rav Chista Amar B'loy Isha. Rav Chista says it means that you're not going to have a wife. Where a wife helps improve a man's helps improve a man's quality of life. At least Soras Rabim Chatzin Nechama, as they say, a trouble that you share with somebody else is already half a comfort itself. So like this, when you don't have a spouse to share it with, then it becomes much harder. Rav Shesha Soma B'loy Shamash. Rav Shesha says it means without a servant, without an attendant to be able to help him, to be able to serve him. Or there's a different explanation that maybe the word is not Shamash as in an attendant, but Shemesh, the sun. In other words, you're going to be in darkness. Rav Nachman Amar B'loy Deya. Rav Nachman says that the B'choser Koil means that Hashem is going to make it. You're not going to have Deya. You're not going to have proper understanding. And that makes the person's quality of life the worst of all when he lacks that. Tona, so those are various opinions of Amiroyim, what's included in the word b'choser kol. So the Gemara says, Tona, in a braisa, we learn yet another meaning, it means b'loy melach v'loy revach. It means that people, even if they have food, it's going to be without salt and without oil. Revav actually literally means grease. So salt and fat or oil or whatever help make your food a little nicer to eat. And you're not and the Torah is warning that you're not going to have those. So now, since we said that Rav Nachman says that b'choser koil means without das, without deya, without understanding, so now the Gemara brings another vote on it. Amar Abaye Naktinan ain oni ela b'das. Abaye says Naktinan. We have the Kabbalah from our Rebbeim. That the word oni ain oni ela b'deya, that the word oni means specifically somebody who lacks deya, somebody who lacks understanding. So Marsha has two explanations. It can mean that specifically over here in the context of the Toichcha, the real poor person is, like Rav Nachman said, somebody who lacks deya, somebody who lacks understanding of course, understanding to be able to put what he's going through in perspective, to be able to understand why Hashem is doing it, etc. The other possibility, Marsha says, is that in general, when we talk about an oni, the real oni in throughout the real poor person throughout human experience is somebody who lacks deya. Because of that, therefore, we use it in a borrowed sense to mean somebody who is lacking money. But the real worst off oni of all is the one who's lacking deya. The Gemara continues, but Ma'arava Amri, in the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, they had an expression, Didabe, somebody who has this, meaning Deya, within him, Koilabe, then he has everything in him. Though once you have Deya, once you have understanding, then that itself means that so that itself means that you have everything, because now it means that you have the ability to take what you have and be able to use it effectively and to be able to understand at least to some extent why it is that Hashem is making these things happen, etc. So therefore, as far as that's concerned, you have everything. But if you don't have this, if you don't have Deya, Ma Bey, then what do you have? Everything else that you have doesn't really mean anything without Deya. They also added, Dokoni, if a person has acquired Deya, Ma Choser, then what is he lacking? In effect, he has everything. Doloikoni, but if he hasn't acquired Deya, Ma Koni, then what has he acquired? Everything else that he acquired, everything else that he owns, is not really worth much without Deya. Why the double thing? First talking about what's in him or not in him, and then what he acquired or not acquired. So the Keren Oda from the Shagas Aryeh says that we're talking about a person has the innate Deya that a person is born with and develops naturally. And then you have the Deya that a person acquires as he goes through life. So the expression that they had, the Ma'an Rava, is mentioning both things. Even a person is naturally a Ben Das, he has to not just rely on his Seichel, he has to work to acquire a greater Das by learning from Chachamim. And that's the second part, that even if he has Das, if he doesn't Deloitte Koni, if he doesn't take the trouble to acquire Das, to acquire Deya, Ma Bey, then the Ma Koni, then what has he acquired? Everything else in life, all the other accomplishments in life that he acquired aren't worth much without Deya. A popular Rav Fried song from a few years back that uses these words from the Gemara. This is where it comes from. Okay. Getting back now to Bikur Cholim. Gemara says, or in general, about sick people in general, Omer of Alexandri, Omer of Chiyah Ba'aba, Ein HaChoyla Omer Mecholyoy, Ad Shemoychon Alay HaKolav HaNoysav. A sick person doesn't recover from his illness unless he's already previously been forgiven by Hashem for all his aveiros. Because, you know, of course, when a person is sick, they do tshuva, and therefore, so what happens is, Hashem forgives them, and the result of that is they recover. Shenema, as the pasuk says in Tehillim, Haseleach l'chol aveinechi, Hashem forgives all your aveiros. Hashem heals all of your sicknesses. So we see that that's the order. First comes forgiveness, then comes refuah. In fact, the Gemara in Megillah mentions that that's the reason why in Shemana Esrei, why we have the order, first slach lanu, and two brachas later, we have refuah. Okay, in between you have re'ina v'anyenu because of a different reason the Gemara explains over there, but the point is that slicha, that being forgiven by Hashem, is an essential prerequisite to refuah. The Gemara says, Rav Hamnuna Omar, Choyzer Limei Alumo. Rav Hamnuna says, not only does a person get forgiven as Averis when he recovers, before he recovers, but also after a person was sick and then he recovers, then he becomes stronger. He goes back to his youth. He becomes stronger than he was before he got sick. Shenemar, Apostle and Eev describes what happens when a person gets sick and then recovers. It says, Rutafash Bisorei Minoyar. His flesh is rutafash from noyar. So rutafash, the Ran explains over here, and Mitzudas explain there on the posit that it's actually a combination of two words, rotov, which means fresh and fresh and vital, and pash, which means growing. So rutafash besore means his flesh becomes more moist and vital and bigger. Minoyar, and that's as a result of having been sick. The word noyar means the word noyar literally means like being shaken up. So like after he was shaken up by his sickness and he recovers from it, the result is that he's stronger and healthier than he was before. And the pasuk continues, Yoshuv b'mei alumov, he returns to the days of his youth. So we see, in other words, that a person recovers from an illness, then they end up stronger than they were before. The Pashtos, I mean, we're talking on a Gashmiistical level. I mean, I'm sure we can also say that it means Beruchnius, like what you have, according to one opinion in the Gemara, Balei Tshuva, which we actually just had an Ein Yaakov the other day, last night, actually, that on one level, Balei Tshuva are greater than Tzaddikim. So in that sense, you know, we're talking about in Ruchniistic illnesses as well. When a person overcomes it, he winds up stronger than he was before. Now, on the other hand, the Gemara says, the Pasuk says in Kapitel Mem Aleph of Tehillim, which we had yesterday in the Gemara, we daushin a couple of psukim from it as referring to a sick person and then visiting him and the schar that a person gets for visiting him. So now, a Pasuk there says, Kol Mishkovei Hafachta B'Cholyoi, you turned over all of his sleeping during his sickness. So Amar Rav Yosef, Loima Dem Shakeach Limuda. So Rav Yosef says one meaning of that pasuk is it doesn't have the simple meaning of the pasuk he would say. In other words, you have a person is sick and tossing and turning in bed, so like everything is all upside down and all disarranged in his bed. But Rav Yosef says it also means that a person, when he becomes sick, may end up forgetting his learning. We're understanding the word mishkava, you're pointing to that, to be, in other words, his learning, which until now was as neatly arranged in his mind, like a neatly made bed, now it all gets confused and turned upside down as a result of his illness. The Ran apparently had a different girsa that takes out the words kol mishkava afach b'cholyo and learns it from the words yoshu l'mei alumov from the pasuk in Iyov that we just quoted, where it means Rabbi Yosef is saying there's a certain sense in which the person returns to his youthfulness in, like we said, he's stronger than he was before. On the other hand, in terms of learning, he goes back to his youthfulness when he didn't know Torah yet. So he forgets the learning that he had acquired throughout all the years of his adulthood. And the Gemara says, in fact, that's exactly what happened to Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef cholash. Rabbi Yosef was sick. And he forgot his learning. Iyakur literally means it was uprooted. The Ran says slightly differently. Iyakur leilimude, or his learning became heavy for him. Either way, the point is, in other words, he forgot it. Ahadre Abaya kameh. So Abaya had to restore it to him. Hainud b'chol duch damrin. And this is why we have in many places in Shas. Amr of Yosef lo shmieli hodoshmaita, where you'll have an explanation of something in Torah, a din or an explanation or something from one of the previous Amiroim, and after they're discussing it in the Beis Medrash, Rabbi Yosef will say, I didn't hear this statement, and you'll have, for example, it'll be a statement, let's say, from Rabbi Yehuda, who was Rabbi Yosef's Rebbe, or from other Amiroim who Rabbi Yosef had learned by, and he would express surprise, how is it I never heard of it before? Omale Abaya, Ata Mrit Nihalon, and Abaya would tell him, you told it to us, Omer Hamas Nissen Amrit Nihalon, and you told it to us in connection with the following Mishnah or the following Braisa. So we see that that's what happened. Rabbi Yosef had learned all these things earlier, and he was one of the greatest Talmid Chachamim of his generation. He together with Rabbah, the Rambam lists them as the Makabli HaTorah of their time. They're the ones who received the entire Torah Sheba'al Peh and transmitted it to the next generation. But Rabbi Yosef at one point became sick and forgot it. And from then on, Abaya and other Talmidim of his have to remind him of what he had previously taught them.
Should Abaya be turned to him?
Means he restored it to him, right? In other words, he would remind Rabbi Yosef that you previously, Abaya was Rabbi Yosef's Talmud, but he would remind him that you previously taught us this din, and you said it to us in connection with this braisa.
And then fixed his memory?
So that helped. Now from then on, he'll remember it. From then on, he'll remember it, yeah. Similarly, the Gemara tells a similar thing as far as Chachamim forgetting their learning and it being restored. When Rebbe had learned 13 different approaches to halacha, which includes so in other words, he had learned 13 different ways of learning the halachas, which includes, for example, so it means that there were the Mishnayos that we have, there were various collections of Braises that existed at that time that he learned. Each of them shows us a slightly different approach to halacha so that you can understand the halacha from many different angles. So when he had learned all of them, he taught Rav Chiya, who was his Talmud, 7 of them. He didn't have the chance, apparently, to teach him the other 6 yet. Later on, Rebbe became sick. We find in a number of places in Shas that Rebbe was sick for many years with toothaches and with other kinds of health problems. Anyway, so he forgot his learning. So Rav Chiya was able to reteach Rebbe that he should be able to and then restore to him the seven approaches that Rebbe had previously taught Rav Chiya. Rav Chiya now remembered them. He hadn't been sick, so he was able to reteach them to Rebbe. But Shita Ozdu, so far, meanwhile, 6 of them were gone because Rebbe, so far, as far as anybody knew, only Rebbe knew them. He hadn't had a chance to teach them to Rav Chiya. So now it would seem Rebbe was sick and forgot them. It would seem they're gone forever. However, the Gemara says, there was a certain laundry man, a certain person who, a poshut yid, whose job was to do laundry. have a shmir leila Rebbe can have a goddess lahu. He would overhear Rebbe. He would regularly be around the Beis Medrash, and he would overhear when Rebbe was learning those other six methods, those other six collections of brises or approaches to halacha or whatever. So even though this Katzer himself was not a Talmid Chacham, he had overheard Rebbe say them, so he was able to pick up enough of it to be able to now goddess. So now also Reb Chiya v'gamo yosin kame Katzer. So now Reb Chiya is able to go and learn them from the laundryman. Because now, in other words, the laundryman is able to remember enough of them, enough of the key words of them, I guess, or whatever, that Reb Chiya can pick up from them what they were. And then Reb Chiya, in turn, was able to go to Rebbe and reteach them to him. So now all 13 are back. Now none of them are lost. So from then on,
We learned about this laundryman two weeks ago, probably.
Yes, we learned about a laundryman in Ksubas. We said that he used to regularly be around Rebbe's Beis Medrash, and then he wasn't there on the day Rebbe passed away, and he was extremely upset about it and fell off the roof, etc. Yeah, I think Marashah says over there that the Pashtus, that's the same laundryman as in our story over here. He had accomplished so much for Rebbe, and now he was so bitterly disappointed when he wasn't there to have the schos to be there when Rebbe passed away. Yeah. So now the Gemara says, "Kad have a chazi le Rebbe lahu katzra." So from then on, when Rebbe would see that laundryman, Omale Rebbe ata osisa oisi veschia. Rebbe would tell him, "You have made me and Chia, because you made us into what we really are supposed to be by teaching us the Torah that otherwise we wouldn't have known." Ikadatmi, or another version, Hachikamale. Another version is that Rebbe tells him, Ata osisa es Chia, you made Chia by teaching him, v'chia osa oisi, and Chia in turn made me by teaching it to me. So we know the Rosh points out, you have the famous thing that kolam lamed es ben chavera Torah ki'ilu yoldei. If a person teaches somebody else Torah, it's as if he made him, as we find by Avram and Sarah, as a nefesh asha osu b'choron, the souls that they made in Choron by teaching them about the Eibishter. So in the same way, this laundryman made Reb Chiya and Rebbe, or made Reb Chiya and Reb Chiya made Rebbe. Now, the Maharal explains in Chedushei HaGodes that the difference between the two versions is, according to the first version, Rebbe himself is considered a Talmud of this laundryman. And according to the second, so Rebbe would have to give kavod to him. According to the second version, the laundryman is considered Reb Chiya's Rebbe, but not really directly, he's not really considered directly Rebbe's Rebbe. Why dafka 13? So Maharsha mentions that we have in many areas of Kedusha, we have 13. We have the 13 Midas of Hashem, the 13 Midas Shatur and Adreshes Behem. The Rambam later on came up with 13 Ikrim. So now we learned a couple of days ago, we said that there are Chamishim Sharei Bina, there are 50 levels of understanding, which Hashem gave Moshe the ability during his lifetime to achieve 49 of them. So now Maharsha says, among them, you have 13 that are most essential for Kedusha. And so that's what we're talking about over here, that you have 13. And then within that, you have 7 that are extra special. So those are the ones that Rebbe had taught Reb Chiya. So it sounds like, in other words, it sounds like Maharsha is saying that it's not that Rebbe didn't have the chance yet to teach those to Reb Chiya, but rather that he picked out the 7 that are the ones in the highest level of Kedusha, and those are the ones he taught Reb Chiya. And then again, the 6 would have been lost if it weren't for that laundryman. Maharsha also says that that laundryman is very likely to be the same one, like you said, Ellie, the one from Ksubas that day hadn't come. Yeah.
All because
Rebbe got sick, right. Yeah. So that's that. So all of this bears out what Rabbi Yosef is saying that you can have based on the psukim that we dash in from Yoshev Lenei Alumov or from Kol Mishkovei Afachta Bechoyei, that it happens, a person becomes sick and forgets his learning. So we have Rabbi Yosef's example of that, and we have Rebbe's example. In each case, though, they had somebody who was able to restore it to them. In the case of Rabbi Yosef, we have Abaya was able to remind him of the halachas that he had forgotten. And in the case of Rebbe, it was Reb Chiya and then the laundryman who were able to do that.
The fact that he gets stronger,
fine. They may be stronger begashmias. That doesn't help them beruchmias. For a tzaddik like Rabbi Yosef or like Rebbe, they don't care that they have the physical strength. What they're interested in is that they should be able to have the ruchnias to the strength. So for that, they have their talmidim to be able to help them with that.
So recovering from an illness doesn't make you necessarily stronger. Actually, that disproves what we said previously, doesn't it?
No, so what we're saying is the person may be physically stronger. Now his flesh and his body is now stronger for having gone through this experience. But his mind still may be strong, but he forgot during his illness, he forgot things that he had previously known. So now, though, we're not saying that the weakness of the mind remains permanently either. Once the person is reminded by Rabbi Yosef, by Abaye, or Rebbe, by Rabbi Chiya, then he'll still be able to know what he knew before. There was a temporary break over there, is what we're saying. Okay, the Gemara goes on. The Amr of Alexandri, Amr of Chiya Ba'aba. The nest that happens to a sick person when he recovers from an illness, in particular when he recovers from a fever, is greater in a way than the nest that happened to Hanani Mishal because what happened to them? They were thrown into a fire that was made by human beings. Anybody can put it out. All you need to do is enough water. You have enough water and you can put out the fire. Whereas the fire that a sick person has, it comes min hashamayim. Who could possibly put it out? So therefore, in other words, so it means that when a person does recover from a fever, he should realize what a tremendous nest was done for him. And also it means as long as the person is sick with a fever, you have to daven very hard for him because you have to daven that he should be able to experience a nest greater than Hanani Mishal Ba'azari. The other Seder of Yeshua ben Levi said the following thing. When a person's end comes, when Hashem decides that it's the time for the person's life to end, everything dominates him, meaning even the smallest creature that the Eibishter made can be the actual cause of his death. So the Mefarish says, for example, even a fly or a mosquito, even though those are tiny little creatures, those still, Hashem decided that the person's time is up. So Hashem can even make such tiny creatures to be the shliach to accomplish it. Yeah, person in that sense is very fragile, yeah. Shenem of a hoyochol moitzi yahugein. We find by Cain, after he kills Hevel, he says to Hashem, anybody who finds me will kill me. So what do you mean, anyone who finds me? Means even the tiniest creature that finds me has the ability to kill me if you decide that my time is up. And therefore, instead, Hashem gave him an ois and he was safe for a while. So that's what it means. Rav Omamin Hodin Kra. Rav says, instead, we can learn it from a different pasuk and tell him. The pasuk says, L'mishpatecha omdu hayom, for your judgments, everything stands today, kiha kol avadecha, because everything is your servants. So meaning, in other words, once l'mishpatecha omdu, once your judgments are standing, once it comes time, Hashem is judged that it's time for a person to die, hakol avadecha, all the creatures in the world now become Hashem's servants to make it happen. So the Gemara gives an example. Rabba Bar Shila omrulei. So for example, they once told Rabba Bar Shila the following story. Shochiv gavra gavoya. There was a tall person who just passed away. So what happened? How did he die? Have a rochid guduna zutra. He was riding on a very small mule, one that the legs are fairly short, so it's sitting fairly close to the ground. Mata titura, which on the face of it, the point is, he being tall and the animal being short, it would be very easy for him to get off and to get off the animal at a moment's notice. But mata titura, the animal carrying this man came to a bridge, east of it. All of a sudden, the animal went crazy. So the Ran explains istavit is related to a word satya, which means crazy. The Rosh and Tosfos say rather that it means that it all of a sudden was frightened by something, was spooked by something, and they relate it to a word in Aramaic siut, which means a bad dream or a nightmare or something. Anyway, whatever the case, the animal reared up and was scared. Was scared or went crazy or whatever. Shadye, so it threw him off the bridge. the koshachiv, and the person passed away. So either it means it threw him off the bridge into the water, or it means that it threw him onto the ground, and then the point would be, according to the first version, if we say that it threw him off the bridge, the point is, again, even though on the face of it, as soon as the animal started shying, he should have been able to get off right away. He's tall and the animal is short. Nevertheless, so he didn't, and he fell into the river and drowned. According to the second version, the point is, even though it was such a small fall, it was only from such a low height, nevertheless, that was enough to kill him. So they told Rabbi Bashila that happened. Kori al nafshe, the mishpatech amdu ayoyim. So Rabbi Bashila said, that's what we mean in the pasuk, for Hashem's judgments that stand on the day, meaning on the day when Hashem decides a person is going to die, then even this short animal can be the cause of his death. Another example, the Gemara says, Shmuel chazulahu krukita de akriva yisiva ala krukta. Okay, on the side of it here, it says that really it's supposed to be hahu akriva yisiva ala krukta. Whatever, akriva means a scorpion, akrukta means a frog. So Shmuel saw that there was a frog with a scorpion sitting on its back, the avra nara, and the frog is crossing the river. The point is, the scorpion itself wouldn't be able to cross the river, so it's using the frog as like a ferry to take it across.
Oh, it was on top of the frog.
It was on top of the frog, right, because the scorpion wouldn't be able to cross by itself. And the Avra Nara, so crossed the river that way, Tarka Gavro Mayas, and then on the other side, the scorpion went over to somebody and bit him and then stung him and killed him. Again, so Shmuel says, this is also an example of this pasuk, that everything in the world serves Hashem. So even though you wouldn't normally have a scorpion, doesn't usually ride on top of a frog, but here Hashem makes it happen in order that the scorpion should get to where it needs to go to do its job. It's funny, by the way, there's a popular expression, it seems to come from a short story written like 100 years ago or so, where you have a scorpion asks a frog, can you take me across the river? The frog says, you're gonna sting me on the way. The scorpion says, why would I? If I do, we're both gonna drown. Meanwhile, on the way, the scorpion stings the frog and they both start drowning, and the frog says, what were you doing? And the scorpion says, basically, I can't help myself, it's my nature. So now you have, so the popular story takes it in that sense, whereas here the Gemara uses the same story to teach us a lesson about the way the Eibishter runs the world. Yeah. Okay. Getting back to Bikur Cholim, Omer Shmuel, Ein Mevakrenes Acholah Ela Lamisha Chalsatu Chama. When you're visiting a sick person, it should only be somebody who has a fever. So the Gemara asks La Pukimai, as opposed to what else? What other kinds of things are Shmuel? Is Shmuel saying you shouldn't visit? The answer is La Puki Hadatanya. Shmuel wants to tell us that you shouldn't visit the kind of people described in the following Braisa, Rab Yosi ben Pauta Oyma Mashum Rabbi Eliezer, Ein Mevakrin Loi Chole Me'ayim. You shouldn't visit people who have stomach trouble, as the Gemara is going to explain in a second why, because I have to keep going back and forth to the bathroom. Right. The Loi Chole Ayim, not people who have a sickness, an infection in their eye, the Loi Mechushe Harosh, or people who have a headache. So therefore, so Shmuel is telling us the same thing. Once you've excluded those things, then really the only major thing that you can be visiting somebody for is where they have a fever. So it can mean, in other words, so it can mean a fever or anything other than these three things that are mentioned in the Braisa. So in other words, so Shmuel is not saying nothing other than a fever. The Ram says he just means as opposed to these three kinds of things. So now the question is why? I understand why you shouldn't visit people who have stomach trouble. Because of the embarrassment. The person may have to go to the bathroom and he's going to want to try to hold himself back because he doesn't want to interrupt the visit. And therefore you're going to put him in discomfort or even in danger. Why shouldn't you visit somebody who has an eye ache or a headache? The answer is Mishum de Rav Yehuda, because of what Rav Yehuda says. Do Amar Rav Yehuda, Dibura Kosha La'ena. Rav Yehuda says speaking is bad for the eyes. So in other words, if a person has sore eyes and they talk, then it makes their eyes feel worse. So therefore, in other words, the point is you're going to do Bikur Cholim, Bepashtus, you're going to sit and talk. But here, talking is bad for the person, so therefore try not to visit at a time like that. Wait till he's recovering, and then it won't hurt him. Umali the Ishasa, on the other hand, speaking is good for somebody who has a fever. So therefore, that's why Shmuel is saying a person has a fever, gesunta hate, go and visit him. I don't know if it's these days. I mean, Nishtanu Ativim to a certain extent, but I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. The Rosh actually has a different girsa, and Agos Agro also has that girsa in the Gemara, that rather what the Gemara is saying is that also speaking is bad for a headache. So that explains why the Braisa is saying and why Shmuel is saying that you shouldn't visit somebody who has a headache for the same reason, because talking is gonna make their headache worse. Now, we're understanding chaltsatu chama as meaning that the person has a fever. Now, usually in Shas, the word chaltsatu chama means the other way around, means the person had a fever and now is recovering from it. Usually, chaltsatu usually means the person has been divested of the fever, like maloshen chalitza. Here, the Ran is explaining that it means, on the other hand, the word chaltsatu can also mean to put on something. He says, like the same way you talk about, for example, the word cholutz can mean a person who is armed with weapons. So the same way, like he's armed, like he's been seized by fever. On the other hand, though, there's one of the achronim of a pirush on nedorim called Shalmei Nedorim. He says that no, maybe over here it does mean chaltsatu in the usual sense that it means throughout the rest of Shas. It means that the person, the fever is broken. But even so, in other words, you still need to be bikur cholim until they're completely better. So we're talking about the fever is broken. Go ahead and visit him because he's still going to need visitors until he's completely back to normal. Right. So in connection with fever, the Gemara says, Omar Rabba, hai ishosta, when it comes to fever that a person has when they're sick, ilav de pravanka de malacha de moisa, were it not for the fact that fever is a shliach of the malach amavis, in other words, sometimes a person has a high fever and that itself kills them, if it weren't for that, really, fever would be a good thing. Mali, fever would be good for the body, kechizra the dikli, like the thorns that grow around a palm tree. So you have at the base of a palm tree, there grow thorns and spiky things, and they keep animals from getting too close to the tree and damaging it. So the same way, Rava is saying that really there's a certain benefit to fever, that it helps clear up things from the body. Medically, what they figured out nowadays is that fever, basically the higher temperature kills bacteria and kills and viruses and things, because those are things they need a certain temperature in order to work with and in order to work in, and therefore, so when a person is infected with some kind of germs, whatever it is, then often it causes a fever, which then that itself, that's the body's reaction in order to kill off those bacteria or whatever. So Rava is saying a fever in and of itself can be a good thing. The problem is that sometimes a fever becomes too high and you can't bring it down, and that itself is dangerous. And in fact, Rava says, chabla klosin yoimin, that would be if the fever is once every 30 days, v'chituyaki legufa, then it's as effective, it's as good for the body as tuyaki. Tuyaki is all of the mafoshim translated over here with essentially the same word in their local languages. It was a known medicine that they had in those times. In particular, it was known there was an antidote that they had against snake venom. A person who was bitten by a snake, they would blend up the stuff called tuyaki and give it to them. So now Rava is saying, as good as that is for the body when a person has been bitten by a snake, so that's how good, to give you an illustration, that is how good and effective fever is for the body in clearing out dangerous things that would make a person sick, dangerous pathogens. On the other hand, Rav Nachman Yitzchak Amar Lo Yehi V'lo Tiryaka. On the other hand, Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, I don't want either it or its teriyaki. In other words, no, better, not like Rava is saying that it's good to have a fever every so often, better to not have the fever and not have the help that it brings, because after all, a fever itself can be dangerous. It goes too high and the person's life is in danger. So in other words, Rav Nachman is basically saying the cure is worse than the disease. Going on, the Gemara says, Omer Rabba bar Yonis and Omer of Yechiel, Ausan Yofel Achoyle Lurfuasai. Ausan, which the Gemara is now going to define, is good for a person, and is good for a sick person to cure. So my Ausan, what is that? Omer of Yonis, Chushla de Sare Atikta. It means you take old barley grains. The point is, once they're old, it's easier to peel off the various shells of it. Chushla means when you do just that, you remove the shells and you have you're left with pearl barley, like you think of the pearl barley that you buy in the store that you put in shalant. That would be chushla desari. That would be they take the barley grains and remove the shells of them. Atikta, where the barley is older, has been sitting in the granary for a while, so it's easier to do that. Deresh nafya, where they fall out of the sieve when you first start sifting. In other words, those are the better quality ones. So the better quality peeled old grains of barley. Those are good for a sick person. Amar Abaya, Abaya says, what do you have to do with them afterwards? Boyan bish bishula kain bistra de terda. You have to cook them as much as you would cook ox meat. In other words, you have to cook them for a long time. And then that porridge that you make out of them is good for a sick person. That's our son. Rabbi Yosef gives a different definition. Smidi de saria tikta doesn't mean the actual grains of barley themselves. It means the fine flour that you make from this old barley, the reish nafia, which comes out of the sieve first. Again, in other words, it's the best quality stuff that comes out. And again, Amar Abaya, boyan bishula kibisu de tora, you would have to cook it like the way you cook beef. In other words, cook it for a long time, and then once it's very soft and runny, then it's good for a sick person. Okay, another din as far as bikur cholim. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, bor dom ein mevakur noisay. A person is suffering from a sickness called bor dom, or the Mefardish brings over here a possible girsa bor dos with a samach. Whatever it is, it means that the person has terrible diarrhea, or specifically some of the many of the Mefarshim explain actually that the Ran and other explanation and other Mefarshim say that it means that the person is that blood is flowing out of him from his rear end. So in other words, so according to the Mefarsh, we're just talking about regular diarrhea. According to everybody else, we're talking about bloody diarrhea. So such a person, it actually comes from the word bur dum, which means a pit of blood, because it's like a pit that's welling forth blood constantly. So such a person, ein mevrakum, so we don't visit him, as the Gemara is going to explain in a second why. The ein maskirin shmoi, you don't even mention the name of the illness. So just like that way you have nowadays, people don't say cancer, they say yenamachla. So in the Gemara's times, Rabbi Yechanan is saying, you shouldn't even mention the name of the sickness, boredom. So the Gemara says, my timer, why shouldn't you visit such a person? Because the person is like a spring welling forth, and therefore would be embarrassing. Again, you know, you're going to be visiting him. He needs to go to the bathroom desperately, or there's blood coming out of him or whatever, and he's going to try to hold himself back, and it's no good. The Amar Rabbi Elazar, Lama Nikrashmo Bordom. Why is it called Bordom? Shokamayin Haneveya. Because again, it's like a spring welling forth. Bordom. It's like a pit of water, but instead of welling forth water, it's welling forth blood. So therefore, you don't even want to mention it. It's not really delicate to mention such a disease. Okay. Now that we've so now getting back to the Mishnah. We said in the Mishnah, again, the subject of the Mishnah was, as it is throughout the Perek, a Mudur Hanah, where Reuven is also to have Hanah from Shimon. So we were talking about what is Shimon allowed to do for Reuven. So in that connection, we mentioned Bikur Cholim, which is what led us into this whole discussion about sick people and Bikur Cholim. We discussed in the Gemara on Daf Lamed Tes a couple of possibilities. Are we talking about that the sick person is also to have Hanah from the visitor, or the other way around, the visitor is also to have Hanah from the sick person? So now the Mishnah had said, the Mishnah had said that he's allowed to cure him with a refuah of his soul, a refuah sanefesh, but not refuah mamon, but not a refuah that has to do with money. Well, that's what we have to figure out. So, right, obviously it means that he's a doctor, but right. So the Gemara asks, hey, Fikatani, what does the Mishnah mean by refuah sanefesh versus refuah mamon? Elema did refuah nefesh bechinam. Do you mean refuah nefesh means to cure him for free? Refuah mamon b'schar, and refuah mamon would be that the patient pays him money. So nefesh, in other words, would mean, because the word nefesh very often means what a person wants. We had before the schar that a person gets for bikur cholim is va'altitneu, but nefesh oivav, that Hashem gives him friends who give him good advice, as opposed to the other way around. The word nefesh often means to want something. Avraham says, for example, to bnei ches, he says yeshef nafshachem, if it's with your soul, meaning if you want to help me bury Sarah, then arrange for me to be able to buy Maris HaMachbeil. So we see the word nefesh means to want something. So refuah nefesh would be that he wants to voluntarily without getting paid. And refuah mamon would be that he pays money. So now the Ran explains that we'd be talking about where the doctor is also to have hana from the patient. So therefore, if you're going to say, therefore, that's why he's not allowed to take money, because he's not allowed to have hana from him. The Rosh actually learns it could be the other way around. We could be talking about that the patient is also to have anah from the doctor. So the Rosh says that, sure, if it's a place where they don't usually charge, then he might be allowed to. But now, if it's a place where they usually charge, then if he foregoes his fee, then you have the problem of giving him a non. Anyway, if you're going to say that, then the Mishnah should phrase it more clearly. It should say he can heal him for free, but not with schar. Ella, no, we have to understand, refuas nefesh means gufay. Refuas nefesh means that the doctor is allowed to take care of the patient. And again, the Ran explains it means the sick person is also to have anav from the doctor. So to use the names that we've been using throughout the perek, the patient is Reuven, who is also to have anav from Shimon the doctor. Nevertheless, the Ran says we're talking about now. There might even be other doctors available, but the Gemara mentions elsewhere the concept that a person you may have, Hashem decides not only when a person should be cured from an illness, but also who's going to be the one through whom it happens. So you never know. Shimon might be the one who was decided. Min HaShemayim should be the one through whom Reuven's refuah will take place. Therefore Shimon can cure him. On the other hand, so he's allowed to do that. And he's accomplishing a mitzvah with that. And as we've learned throughout the perek, doing a mitzvah is not necessarily considered a hana. Refuas mamon would be behemta. Refuas mamon would be where Reuven's animal is sick, where then Shimon can't be a veterinarian to cure it. Now the Ran learns that would only be if there's another doctor available, because after all, the Ran says to cure the person's animal is not really so much of a mitzvah. But still, there are other doctors available. You don't say by animals that he may be zoicha only to be cured through this doctor. The Ran says if there's no other doctor available, then he would even be allowed to treat the animal. Because he says that would actually, that would be considered Hashavas Aveda. We know that Hashavas Aveda applies not only to a person's property, but also to his life. The fact that he's doing when he's curing the person himself, when Reuven himself is sick and he's curing him, that is a form of Hashavas Aveda. When he's curing this animal is also a case of Hashavas Aveda. Maybe the reason the Gemara is not mentioned in Tzah Ba'al Chaim is because actually the Gemara in Bava Metzia discusses it's Tzah Ba'al Chaim D'Oraisa or D'Rabbanan. If it's only D'Rabbanan, it can't override a nether, which is D'Oraisa. But in any case, the point is, the Ran says, if there's somebody else available, so then when it comes to curing Reuven himself, Shimon will still be allowed to, because like we said, maybe Hashem decided that Reuven is going to be cured davka from Shimon, but with an animal, we can't say that. Let Shimon leave it to somebody else to cure the animal. As opposed to, if there's nobody else available, then the Ran says it would be a matter of Hashavas Aveda, and then he would be allowed to. The Gilyan HaShastra, Akiva Eger, actually asks on that still, how would it be? I mean, it's one thing returning a lost object. You're not actually, you're preventing somebody else from taking it. Here, you're actually curing the animal. So how would that be motor? And he leaves it as tzorichim. On the other hand, the Mefarish over here printed under Rashi's name learns the other way around. We're talking about the other way around He says that it means again, we're talking about that Reuven is also to have anav from Shimon, but we're talking about Reuven himself initiated the neder and said, I will be also to have anav from you. Nevertheless, just like we learned by Bikur Cholim, he would have never intended that the neder should include something that's essential to his own life. Therefore, Shimon is allowed to treat him, but that wouldn't apply to his animal. Therefore, Shimon remains also to treat his animal. The Rosh understands, on the other hand, that there's no real mitzvah to heal the animal. So the Rosh says there really wouldn't be a difference whether there's another veterinarian available or not. Either way, you can't cure Reuven's animal if Reuven is also to have anav from you. Unlike the Ran, who's distinguishing whether there's another doctor available or not, the Rosh doesn't make that distinction. So the Gemara says, Amar of Zutra Bachuvya Amar Rab. Now, it is true that in cases like this, Shimon will not be able to cure Reuven's animal because he'll be giving him anah. Avol oimoloi, however, he is allowed to tell him, sam ploini yofala, sam ploini ra'la, you should know, this medicine is good for the animal. This one is not, because then he's not actually giving it anything. Then he's just giving him advice. That's not really considered hana. That's only a gurim of hana. So therefore, that would be fine. With that said, though, the Beis Yosef points out, if it's the kind of thing like you have nowadays, a doctor charges for such advice as well, then yeah, it would be also, because then he's giving him monetary hanah. Okay. Next, the Mishnah says, continuing on the topic of a mudu hanah, the roichitz ime ba'bati gdoyla. Suppose you have, again, Reuven is also tamanah from Shimon, so now Reuven and Shimon will be allowed to bathe together in a large tub. Because a large tub, you don't really have what do you have? When each person, as they get into the tub, they make the water level a little higher. So now, if it's a small tub, then when Shimon gets in, he's directly causing Reuven Hanah, more of his body is now covered with the water. But now, but if it's a large tub, it's not really going to make a difference, so therefore it'll be mutter. Avaloi b'ktana, but not in a small tub, because of that, because when it's a small tub, he's causing the water level to go much higher. And that's giving Reuven direct hana. Rabbi Yehuda Omer b'mosa chama avaloi b'mosa gshom. And Rabbi Yehuda says that would apply during the summer, but not to the winter. I skipped the line. The yoshin ime b'mita, and they're also allowed to sleep together. Now they're allowed to sleep together in a bed. So one second. So the Tanakhama seems to be saying that it wouldn't matter that any time he's allowed to. But Rabbi Yehuda Omer, b'moisachama avaloi b'moisachshamim, Rabbi Yehuda says only during the summer, not during the winter. Not during the winter, because it's causing a mana. Because, in other words, during the summertime, you don't gain from the warmth in the bed, but during the winter time you do. So that would be considered hana. The Ran brings in this connection, a pasuk from Kehelas, that says if a person lies in a bed by himself, how is he going to be warm? But you have two people lie in a bed together, they help warm each other up. The nimshal of it is the way one person helps the other in learning Torah and in accomplishing other things in life, that you need a friend to help you out. But the point is, in other words, so the Ran learns that Rabbi Yehuda is not arguing with the Tanakhama, he's just clarifying. He's saying this, that you, Tanakhama, are saying you're allowed to sleep together in a bed would actually only be during the summer, but not during the winter. On the other hand, there are other Rishonim. The Tosfos Rid disagrees and says that the Tanakhama would allow it even during the winter. That's not considered that much of a hanah, whereas Rabbi Yehuda is saying that no. The Rambam passes like Rabbi Yehuda, implying the pashtus that he holds, like the Ram, that Rabbi Yehuda is only clarifying rather than arguing with the Tanakhama. Next, Umesiv Imay Alamita. The two of them are allowed to recline together on a bed in order to eat, because then you're not really warming each other up when you're doing that. Pashtus, I guess you're laying a little further apart so you can both eat without getting food on each other. So therefore there's no hanah there. But oichel imay al shofan. Similarly, the two of them are allowed to eat together on a table. We're not making a gzeira that one of them may eat from the other one's food. Why not? The Rosh points out, generally, when you have a case of mudra hanah like this, it means they don't like each other. So therefore, there's less of a problem that one of them is going to go and eat from the other one's food. We know we have a halacha in connection with basa b'chalav, that, for example, if you have two people who know each other and are likely to take from each other's food, they have to eat on separate tables or separate placemats or whatever, so they don't come to take from each other's food. But here, the Rosh is saying, since they don't like each other anyway, then we're not worried that one of them is going to end up taking from the other one's food. But they're not allowed to eat together out of a tamchui, which is a large tray that they would serve food on, because then you have the problem that the problem might be that Shimon, it might deliberately leave over a piece of food in the tamchui for Reuven to take, and then it comes out that he's giving Reuven hanah. However, they are allowed to eat together out of a tray that returns, that circulates around the table, which the Gemara is going to explain. Well, the Gemara is going to explain what that means. So the Gemara says, Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, lo yirchatz ime ba'ambati. They're not allowed to bathe together in a tub. Lo yoshin ime b'mita ben gdola ben k'tana. They're not allowed to sleep together in a bed, whether it's a big bed or a small bed. Divrei Reb Meir. That's what Reb Meir says. Reb Yehuda Omer. Reb Yehuda says no. It depends. Gdola b'mosa g'shamim. If it's a big tub during the winter, where then a big tub, again, there's no a big tub or a big bed. So a big tub, you're not really raising the water level. So therefore, he's not having hanah. In the case of a big bed, they're not really close enough together to warm each other up. So that would be mutter. Uktana, b'mosachama, or a small one during the summertime. would be mutter, because again, a small one, if it's a tub, even though the water level is going higher, it's during the summertime, it's anyway hot, you're not really gaining anything from the extra hot water. And in the case of the bed, you're not really gaining anything from having extra heat in the bed. So that would be mutter. Similarly, similarly, they'd be allowed to bathe together in a large tub. The point would be, we're not gozer that they shouldn't bathe in a large tub because they might come to bathe in a small tub. So actually, the Ran says it's not even a matter of that Rav Meir is talking about when he'll have hana, when not. We don't want them to bathe together in a large tub, because they might instead bathe in a small tub and then he's going to cause hana. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda is not concerned about that. They don't like each other anyhow, but yeah, well, we're talking about practically speaking, when he gets in, he is raising the water level, but Rabbi Yehuda is considering, fine, a small one, that would be also, because there is a direct hana, and a big one, not, we're not going to be gozo that you can't do a big one, because you might come to do a small one. Continues the Braisa, umazia ime b'ktana, you are allowed to sweat together in a small one. Because even in a small one, you're not bathing, you're just sitting over there and shvitzing, so you're not really having hana from one, one is not really having hana from the other. So the Ran explains that actually the Tanakhama in our Mishnah agrees with Rabbi Yehuda here in the Braisa. That's what the Ran had said, that Rabbi Yehuda is not disagreeing with the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, he's explaining him. And then we have Rabbi Meir has a different opinion. But we said they are allowed to recline together on a couch or a bed in order to eat. They're allowed to eat together at a table because there's no hana over there. We said they can't eat out of a big serving tray, because, like we said, Shimon might leave over a piece of food for Reuven, and that would be considered giving him hana. However, but we said in the Mishnah they are allowed to eat out of a tamchoy that circulates around. So what does that mean? It means when there's so much food on the plate that eventually it comes back to the balabais. So now, even if Shimon leaves something over, it's not considered a direct hana from Reuven, because anyway, there was a lot of food on it. So whether Shimon left a particular piece of food over or not, either way, Reuven is not really having hana from Shimon, because there was a lot of food on the tray anyway. It's going around the table and eventually returning into the balabais, still with some food on it. So therefore, there's no hana involved. So the Mishnah continues. Here's another din. When a person is mudr hana from somebody else, they're not allowed to eat together out of the avos that's in front of workers. Avos literally means a trough, like what you feed animals out of. Here it means basically also like a big gigantic plate or tray or whatever. Yeah, more like a tamfoy, but even bigger apparently, like a big trencher that they put in front of all the workers. Like you have a bunch of workers working on your field or whatever. So you put down a gigantic tray in front of them and everybody takes food out of it. The Chelantons of 70, yeah. Yeah. Or maybe you could also say like a smorgasbord or something. Anyway, the point is that you're not allowed to eat there, because again, the point is, even though there is a lot of food over there, because the difference is, unlike in the previous case, you're sitting by a table and eating and each person is taking a portion of food, here the workers are working very hard, therefore they eat a lot more. So you might have that Shimon might deliberately eat a little bit less in order for to leave a little bit more over for Reuven, and that's considered giving Reuven hana.
Even though some people eating together.
Even though many people are eating together, but yeah, each one is eating a large amount. So therefore, yeah. Rav Meir goes on to say they're also not allowed to work together on the same row in a vineyard. So uman means a row. So it means, let's say, for example, they're both working in a vineyard and hoeing the ground and digging up the ground in order to bring air to the roots and whatever and soften the soil. So they're not allowed to work in one row. Because what happens is each one, as he's digging, is softening the soil for the other one. So therefore, he's causing a mana. On the other hand, he is allowed to work in the same row as long as they're far apart. That's not considered such a direct hana.
especially if they're doing it for the all hired as workers.
Well, it's all hired as workers, but still, he is causing enough. He's making the other ones work easier. So now, like Gemara says, because of like Pligi de Osir, if they're both right near each other, there's no question it's Osir, because the fact is, in other words, so Reuven is digging his part, Shimon is digging his part, but when Shimon digs his part right near Reuven, it softens the soil a little bit for Reuven. So Reuven is going to be digging right next to it, and the Shimon doing the work there is going to soften it for him. Keep Pligi but Rochet. The machlokas is when they're far apart in the first place. Reb Meir Sava Gazrin and Rochet Mishum Karev. Reb Meir says we make Xeder. They shouldn't even do it when they're far away because they may forget and do it when they're close. To come Rapu Lela Arakame, where there he's softening the soil in front of him. But Abon and Sabri, like Gazri, like Gazrin and the Chum say, we're not Gozer. And therefore, as long as they're far apart enough that Reuven, that Shimon's digging is not benefiting Reuven, then they'd be allowed to. The hatred will remind them, maybe, but whatever the case, point is the Chum are saying we're not worried about that. Okay, thanks everyone.